Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, I'll be talking to Julie Burkhart about her work with Dr. George Tiller and the sentencing of the man convicted of murdering Dr. Tiller. Also, a lesbian tries to go to prom, and the entire school in town act like giant babies about it. And the opposition to healthcare reform goes low. Like, in your pants low. I don't know what to make of this story.
An Indiana man goes on a bizarre rampage at a supermarket, apparently in the name of vegetarianism. This 911 call was placed as Anthony Kaufman ran down the meat aisle with a hunting knife.
We have a gentleman here cutting into the meat, throwing it onto the floor.
According to WRTV in Indianapolis, Kaufman didn't stop there. He smeared dog food on the meat packages he hadn't dumped on the floor. He reportedly told employees he was on a mission from God and that he was trying to save little girls from eating beef, a meat he blames for making them fat.
I'm just going to note the links between this guy using the control of female bodies as cover for his aggression and the excuses made by anti-choicers, and leave it at that. The right-wing reaction to healthcare reform passing has gotten so completely silly that I couldn't contain it in this week's Wisdom of Wingnuts. And for some reason, there's a strong penis theme running through the entire freakout. If you think I'm kidding, well, let's just start with the meme that's running through the right-wing noise machine about Nancy Pelosi and her giant gavel.
If she was really worried about violence and she thought these people were violent, why would you grab a big hammer and walk into a sea of these people?
Her purpose in the Congressional Black Caucus to walk over, then Pelosi over there with a big gavel trying to provoke an incident.
I think Nancy Pelosi marching through the protesters on the eve of the healthcare battle with that big mallet in her hand.
Boy, they just can't scrub that image from their heads of Nancy Pelosi walking around with a big gavel in her hands. Think there's maybe some psychosexual issues going on there? Why the fascination with her giant gavel is some sign that she's too big for her dainty lady britches. And the language being used, that she was asking for violence by walking around with a big old phallic symbol of power in her hands, this is getting raw and weird. The gavel, for what it's worth, is symbolic to people without these kind of sexist hang-ups for an entirely different reason. The gavel was lent to Pelosi by Representative John Dingell, whose father used it when they passed Medicare in 1965. It was about the historical legacy of healthcare reform, one that I hope continues into the future since this bill doesn't do nearly enough. But it's hilarious watching all these right-wing dudes completely lose it at the memory of Pelosi, the first female Speaker of the House, walking along with that giant gavel in her hand. But this is far from the only penis-related wingnuttery to come out of the aftermath of the healthcare reform bill passing. If you haven't heard it, check out this story of a Florida-based urologist, Dr. Jack Castle, who has decided to react to healthcare reform by telling his patients that voted for Obama that they're not welcome to his care. He went on to the Alan Colmes show to defend himself. And let's just say that his level of understanding of the issues should alarm anyone who has let Dr. Castle near his precious man junk.
Hospice cuts in 2012? Well, I mean, does the government want people to die slowly?
You don't. Do you really think the government wants people dead?
Well, I think that they're cutting all supportive care, like nursing homes, ambulance.
What do you mean they're cutting nursing homes?
They're cutting nursing home reimbursements.
Isn't what they're cutting under the Medicare plans what was really double dipping? They were getting credits, and they were getting to deduct them at the same time.
Well, you know what? I can't tell you exactly, what the deal is.
Tell us exactly what the deal is, why are you opposed? Why are you opposing
it
and fighting against it?
I'm not the guy who wrote the plan.
But if you don't know what the deal is, why are you speaking out against something you don't know what the deal is?
Well, I mean, I get what I get online, just like any other American.
So, Dr. Castle read a bunch of misinformed right-wing media, and got ideas about cuts in Medicare that aren't going to happen. Even though, you know, the people that are raising this alarm are right-wingers who'd like to shut down Medicare altogether. But when Colmes calls him out on this misinformation, his reaction is to pretend that there's no way to know what's in the bill. But the sources he's reading are telling him they know. So is he admitting that they just make it up and he believes it because he wants to? Anyway, the notion that the bill is some miserably impossible thing to get your hands on is completely silly. Not only is the text available to anyone who wants to read it, as I covered last week, congressional members who passed this bill have gone on an all-out education frenzy so that people know how much is in the bill. As a doctor, Dr. Castle might be interested to know that paying for health insurance for his employees will get much cheaper for him now. But for those of us whose minds are in the gutter, I have to point out that someone who is that incurious and prone to knee-jerk reactions is probably not the person you want, if you're a man, handling your man parts. At least if you cherish them. Jon Stewart on The Daily Show also went straight to the penis jokes.
But if you voted for Obama, this man will not touch your penis. But, if you voted for McCain, he'll touch your penis.
In all seriousness, okay. I can't be serious. When the opposition seems to see what is functionally a dry piece of healthcare legislation as some sort of monster assault, often aimed directly at their manhood, I'm left in a sea of childish giggles. What else can you do? I'd like to welcome Julie Burkhart to the program. Julie worked side by side with Dr. George Tiller for 8 years, first as the chair of the Wichita Choice Alliance, and later as a spokesperson for his clinic and the CEO of Pro Can Do, the PAC he founded in 2002. After Dr. Tiller was murdered last May, Burkhart carried on as the founder and executive director of the Trust Women PAC. She's here today to talk about the aftermath of Dr. Tiller's death, including the recent sentencing of his murderer, Scott Roeder. Welcome to RealityCast, Julie.
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you for having me this afternoon.
Scott Roeder got the maximum sentence for murdering Dr. Tiller, which was life with the possibility of parole in 50 years. In the statement that you released to the press, you indicated that while it's good that he got the sentence, it doesn't do much to stop the problem of anti-abortion terrorism. Can you elaborate on this point?
Yes, certainly. When anti-choice activists use terms like baby killer, Holocaust, murderer, that's the equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater. And that language contributes to an environment where violence against providers and their staff members is acceptable. So when you have militant anti-choice leaders who spew this inflammatory, violent rhetoric, they do bear some responsibility for Dr. Tiller's death. And they can't just blame Scott Roeder as the trigger man.
You've basically said the U.S. Department of Justice needs to do more to fight anti-choice terrorism. What should the DOJ be doing, and what kind of pressure can we exert on them?
Well, the Department of Justice, what they need to be doing is opening investigations into this domestic terrorism, and they need to start shutting down these groups who use this inflammatory, violent rhetoric. And when appropriate, they need to be charging the leaders of these organizations and taking them to court for these actions. I mean, until the Department of Justice goes after these domestic terrorists who have been stalking, harassing, and murdering providers, you know, with near impunity now, things are not going to change. So there needs to be a large vocal call to action from people across the country to put pressure on the Department of Justice to investigate these domestic terrorists.
And was there anything surprising to you that happened during the sentencing proceedings?
Unfortunately, there was nothing surprising. I thought it was disturbing that Roeder had no remorse, that he believes that he was doing God's will by murdering Dr. Tiller in his church. And, you know, Dr. Tiller was practicing constitutionally sanctioned medicine. So it's very troubling to me that Roeder, as well as his followers, believe that he did nothing wrong. And this is something that we saw during the trial and during sentencing, and that they think it was okay for Roeder to stalk, harass, and eventually murder Dr. Tiller. They feel that those actions were justified.
So let's talk some about the good work of Dr. Tiller's life. You're at the head of an organization now that you founded. It's called the Trust Women Pack, and you've done this to carry on Dr. Tiller's legacy. How are you carrying on his legacy?
Well, we're working to protect the rights of physicians, mainly physicians who provide later termination of pregnancy, as well as the rights of women and their families to access these services. Currently, we are working in the state of Nebraska. We've been working to defeat a bill there, LB 1103. And this is a bill, it's a pre-viability ban. They seek to move the line at which a woman can have a procedure from the time of viability, which is typically about 24 weeks of pregnancy, back to 20 weeks. And there is a removal of the mental health exception. They're aiming to severely narrow the health exception. And legislators in Nebraska have said that they want to take their intent behind this is to take it to the federal level. They want this fight in the courts. They want to set new precedent.
Let's talk some more about Dr. Tiller. What was your relationship to Dr. Tiller?
Well, I was his top political advisor, and I worked side by side with him in Wichita, Kansas, for 8 years. I can say that he was the mentor in my life, and I still reflect on words that he had for me, advice that he had for me to give me guidance and strength today. He was an incredible man, and I admired him.
He called himself a woman-educated doctor. Can you explain what he meant by that?
Yes. Yes, he did. He did consider himself to be a woman-educated physician. He felt that it was important to understand the needs of his patients, and so he learned to listen intently and respectfully to his patients, so that he could figure out what women wanted, what they needed. And then he trusted them to make difficult medical decisions. And after those decisions were made, he would then provide quality care and care that was judgment-free.
In the wake of his death, there's been, I think, a lot more public discussion about exactly what would cause a woman to ask for a later term abortion. Do you think that this discussion has been productive in any way, or is it just all downhill?
The goal of the anti-choice movement has been to marginalize this type of reproductive health care, late termination of pregnancy, to show the gruesome or ugly side of it. But I think that what, the facts of the matter, and I think the point that will come to light and win at the end of the day is that you have real women with families, or sometimes without. But women who, with later term procedures, are typically wanted pregnancies. Women who have been preparing for another child, to welcome that child into their family, and something has gone terribly wrong. So I think that this is, the anti-choice have tried to paint this as a very ugly side of women's reproductive health care, but the fact of the matter, it's a very needed and necessary part of women's reproductive health care, because sometimes things go terribly wrong during pregnancy.
Now, there are very few doctors in the U.S. left who are both qualified and willing to perform these kinds of procedures. Dr. Leroy Carhart, I know, has been taking on some of Dr. Tiller's, the cases that Dr. Schiller would have taken on. What can we in the pro-choice community do to help support people doing this very necessary, but, you know, obviously very hard work?
Well, I think one thing that can be done is gestures of appreciation to not only the physicians who are providing this care, but also to staff members, nurses, the receptionists, schedulers who walk into those clinics every day. I think that also in states where we have late-term providers as well as all providers, being in tune with what is going on politically, because oftentimes whoever is elected into office at the state level is going to set policy possibly for decades to come. So being diligent in the political realm as well.
Thank you very much. My guest today has been Julie Burkhart. She was a close associate of the murdered abortion provider, Dr. George Tiller. She currently runs the Trust Women PAC and works tirelessly to keep alive Dr. Tiller's message about trusting women. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Julie.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
The story of Constance McMillan, a teenage girl from Mississippi embroiled in an ACLU lawsuit, is twofold. One, it's refreshing to see how strong and brave some people can be when they're so young. But it's also sad to see how mean-spirited and bigoted others can be. But let's start at the beginning. Constance is a high school student in Fulton, Mississippi. Like many high school students, she wanted to go to the prom and she wanted to bring as her date the person she was dating. But in her case, that person is female, and instead of doing what they should and just being cool with it, the school decided they would do absolutely anything to keep a lesbian couple away from the prom.
So this has basically snowballed, and you found out earlier, in fact, yesterday, the school board saying, look, we're canceling the prom. There's not going to be a prom. No one has said specifically it's because of your request, but I know that's really the feeling you're getting. What was it like when you went back to school?
It was hostile, but it was like silent. I mean, a lot of people didn't. I mean, I had a few people come to me and say stuff to me.
Like,
you know?
What?
Well, like, you were in my senior year and stuff like that. But, I mean, you're going to have people that are going to be like that, so.
What's interesting about this tactic is that the school officials are such experts at exploiting teenagers' worst impulses. From an adult perspective, it's clear that the people who canceled the prom were the people who, you know, actually canceled the prom. But of course, teenagers can be very small-minded, and so blaming the girl who sticks out a little for being the one who caused the prom to be canceled is clearly effective. Dan Savage addressed the case on his podcast and talked about how bad something like this really can be.
And the school board canceled the prom and pointed the finger at this lesbian student who has months more to go in school, whose classmates are going to look at her every day and blame her for the cancellation of prom. This school board has incited violence against this lesbian student. And they say it's because of the recent distraction, the distraction being Constance McMillan's desire to be treated like any other student.
And indeed, as Dan predicted, the unwillingness of the school to just let this one go, but instead kick and scream and oppress this teenager for what is a very simple desire, has created a real storm and a lot of abuse aimed at Constance. And a lot of it comes from adults who seem dead set on highlighting the difference between Constance's calm maturity and their own childish unwillingness to get along with other people who are different from them.
In Mississippi News tonight, thousands of people have expressed their support for an Itawamba County student who wanted to bring her girlfriend to the prom, but not everyone is on her side. A small group of people have come up with a bold way to make their opinions known. They posted signs on the school's entrance. Above the I, a sign says, "What happened to the Bible Belt?" Above the A, it says, "If same-sex marriage is illegal in our state, why should we condone this?"
We started making signs, and then I said, well, if we've made the signs, we might as well go down there and post them, because if you don't stand up for what you believe.
You heard that right. A bunch of so-called adults got together, made signs taunting a teenage girl, and hung those signs all over the school. But it gets worse, if you can believe it. Since this is going on in Mississippi, we're talking about an area that has a whole lot of practice in finding ways to get around anti-discrimination laws, trying to keep segregation alive for decades after the federal government banned it. One thing that's happened in a lot of places in the South, especially Mississippi, is that the white kids have a separate private prom that the black kids aren't invited to. And that's the strategy that was used against Constance. The school had the official school prom, and she went, and there were, in her words, only 7 students there. It was her date, a couple of kids with learning disabilities, and I'll bet dollars to donuts that the others were also social rejects. The school, the families, and the kids plotted to set up a fake prom to send these kids to while they all partied down at the big prom that they didn't tell them about. It's amazing to me, since this is a small town. So that means the people plotting against her know her. The parents that plotted against her, they probably remember her as a little kid playing at their houses. And despite all this, they conspired to set up a fake prom. That's a level of hate that's incomprehensible to me. But there is good news in all of this. Constance, who has been brave and commonsensical all through this, was invited to go on Ellen DeGeneres' show. Warning about this next clip. It will make you teary-eyed. Or it did me.
Here's what we want to do. I know education is really important to you, right? We got a call from tonic.com. It's a website dedicated to promoting the good that happens in the world each day. They focus on people like you who are making a difference. Tonic.com wants to give you a $30,000 check towards your college education. I also want to offer you an internship this summer in New York City. If you're interested, you can go to New York and intern. All right?
So the path out of there is set for Constance. Too bad that's the best solution for a lot of young people who are gay or even just different to leave. Because the people that are poorer for it are the people in these places who don't get to benefit from the energy, intelligence, and creativity of the young people they squeeze out. Let's hope the ACLU wins this lawsuit. Now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, Okay Then edition. There's a 50s era law on the books in California that requires doctors to look into the causes and cures of homosexuality, and California lawmakers want to overturn it. You know, because the APA and every other reputable medical organization has come around to the view that gay is not a disease to cure. But CNN, in their infinite wisdom, brought ex-gay goober Richard Cohen on to defend this old law.
I think that we should keep this bill, the AD 50 in California, for two reasons. One, it says let's do research why sexual predators abuse children. And I am a survivor of sexual abuse. So to do research to find out why predators do this is excellent. Secondly, it says, let's do research about the causes, healing of homosexuality. Now, we know there's people who want to live a homosexual life, and then there's those who wish to seek change and come out straight. That's been my journey.
Of course, no one is stopping anyone from researching whatever they want. They can research why unicorns like to eat pixie dust if they want. they'll get about as far as you'll get looking for the cure for homosexuality. Of course, Cohen has been thoroughly discredited and kicked out of the American Counseling Association for his unethical work. He shouldn't be on TV, much less given a platform to pretend vicious anti-gay legislation is just a matter of asking questions.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.